Hi, Philly. My name's Eric. I'm an addict.
Eric.
And I just want to ask if we could just have a moment of silence so that I can ask my God to come in and I can share a message that is directly from the God of my understanding and I can get out the way. We can have that moment now, please. Thank you. Again, my name is Eric. I'm an addict.
Hey, Eric.
And first and foremost, I need to thank God for his grace and mercy and the program of Narcotics Anonymous for my life today. Because as a result of this program of Narcotics Anonymous, my life today is truly a life worth living. For that, I'm eternally grateful. I also need to thank God for bringing me to Narcotics Anonymous. And I got to thank Narcotics Anonymous for getting me a closer relationship with the God of my understanding. I want to thank the Unity Retreat Committee for 2010 for giving me an opportunity to participate another day in my own personal recovery and share my experience, strength, and hope in this fellowship. I just want to let you know that for me, the process of recovery and the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous is not a fucking joke. You know, it's no other way that I can say it. It's a life and death struggle on a consistent basis, and the journey continues. This is not a program for the meek at heart. And for me, you know, it's not a program to be taken lightly because I truly understand where I came from. And I understand what direction I'm going in today. And I can truly say and remember that there wasn't no direction like that in my life prior to coming to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I am not going to stand up here and tickle your ears or dazzle you with bullshit. I'm going to tell you the truth, nothing but the truth, so help me God. As far as my experience, strength, and hope is, we're working a program in Narcotics Anonymous, living a program in Narcotics Anonymous in my life. I'm not going to qualify, but I am going to tell you that for a long time, I used too much, too often, for too long. You know, for a long time, and I'll say for over 20 years, I paid a high cost for some real low living, and I did not understand that until my eyes was open, the fantasy was shattered by the program of Narcotics Anonymous and the reality dose that it placed in my life. They didn't give me a topic to share on or anything like that. I usually always talk about how it works because it's real important for me to remember how this program works. My clean date, February 10th, 2003. Through God's grace and mercy in the program of Narcotics Anonymous, my last anniversary, February 10th, I celebrated 7 years of continuous abstinence and clean time in this program. Thank you for clapping, but it's not necessary because in reality, it's only the shit that I should have been doing all along. You know what I'm saying? But I understand that that wasn't, you know, an ego boost. That was just, you know, unconditional love coming from you, and I accept that today. You know, I didn't share my clean date to seem and appear as though, you know, I've arrived anywhere because I haven't. You know, my recovery process is still a daily fight with the disease of addiction. My disease is not in the parking lot over there sitting next to my sponsor and my support group members and sponsee brother doing push-ups. My shit, my disease is still in shape. And it's waiting for me to forget where I came from, to get relaxed with my process of recovery, to start to feel like I've arrived somewhere or I got this thing. And the very moment that I do that is the very moment that I put myself in grave danger. You know, I'm standing here before you today clear about one thing and one thing for sure. I'm still capable of using any given day. I've learned to live drug-free through this program, but that don't make me drug-proof. I'm still capable of making a conscious decision, and I'm really trying to work on my profanity and get a little more spiritual, but there's some expletives that are just absolutely necessary. And the only expletive that I can use to explain what I do when I decide to put a move monitoring chemical in my body is fuck my life up. Because guess what? Through the reality of the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I can no longer claim ignorance to the fact that one is too many and a thousand is never enough. That when I use, I lose. When I use, I make a conscious decision to fuck my life up all over again. And that's exactly what it is. Look, I don't put no cut on my recovery. I'm going to tell the truth and shame the devil. I was told when I got here that I need to chase my recovery like I chased the drug. And if I was out there chasing the drug, I'd run over Lottie Dottie and everybody in this room for a sample bag. And that's no joke. So I need to have that same kind of vigilance in my process of recovery. And when I was looking for my drug in the street, I wanted the most pure and uncut product that I could possibly get. So that's the kind of recovery process I give and I adhere to. I'm going to give it to you as uncut and as raw as it is. You know the truth. I'm not putting no sugar coating on it. I'm not putting no cut on it. I'm going to tell you the truth and I'm going to leave it there. Do with it what you will. Because this is my experience, strength, and hope. So I'm here to share the good news because, you know, we all know what it's like to use. We all know the monsters. We all know the low self-esteem. We all know about the shame and the guilt from the greasy things that we choose to do in order to find ways and means to get more. We all know what that feels like. I don't want to talk about that. Because we all know that, and I know that we all know that. Because, you know, for a Saturday evening, I know this ain't the most banging place you could be in Johnstown, is sitting in a church basement listening to me rattle on about not using drugs. You know what I'm saying? So I know that we're here because we share a common bond. There's a common denominator. You know, and it says it in one of our reading. It says, Narcotics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. And if I'm in the right place, I believe everybody qualifies with that. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to tell nobody else's story, but I like to be positive and believe that that's why we're all here. You know, the good news that I want to share tonight is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. And ladies and gentlemen, you know, the stop using drug part, the get some abstinence, you know, that seems to be the thing that's easily acquired in this process, you know. And a lot of times what gets missed is the finding a new way to live. That's the hit. You know what I'm saying? Because the same person will use again. This is a program of change. And I found out in my process that change is the essence of life. And I had to become willing to change all that I was when I got here for all that I could become through the practical application of the program of Narcotics Anonymous in my life and all my affairs. I also found out that the program of Narcotics Anonymous is about relationships. Immediately, a lot of times when you say relationships, everybody think, oh, man, woman, relationship. That's the most trivial one of the scale, you know, and it's not to put man or women down, but that's the most trivial relationship part on the scale of relationships in this process. There are many, many other relationships that gets overlooked when that topic is brought up. And I found out that one of the most important things for me was to first get a relationship with myself. And when I say get a relationship with myself, because I rolled up to the program of Narcotics Anonymous a compulsive liar. I was living in a fantasy world. You know what I'm saying? I didn't stay connected to reality because I was dug so deep into denial, and denial protects you from reality. It keeps you from experiencing the realities. So, you know, I had to get a relationship with myself, you know what I'm saying, to find out what real condition I was in. And there was a piece of literature that helped me immensely in that process of finding out what condition I was in. I call it my diagnosis chapter. It's called Who is an Addict? That diagnosed me. Because for a long time, I really didn't know what was wrong with me. And mind you, you know, I went to school. I know a few things, you know what I'm saying? I know how to add a couple. I know how to do a couple of fractions and a little bit of algebra. I know a few things. But I could not figure out, in a reality sense, what was really wrong with me. It wasn't that I used too much drugs and my behaviors had got out of whack. I thought I was having bad days. It didn't work so good for me today. So this is why these circumstances came. This is why I lost this girlfriend. This is why my aunt won't let me in the house. You know what I'm saying? Because it ain't the right time. You know what I'm saying? I'm a little off schedule. You know what I'm saying? That was the denial part, not looking at things in a realistic sense. The next relationship that I needed to get, and a real important relationship, was a relationship with the powers greater than myself. And I'm not talking about God yet. I'm talking about the powers greater than myself. Once I've made a decision that I wanted to affect some positive change in my life, how do you go about doing that? How do I get on that journey? And how I got on that journey was by getting in touch with the powers that were greater than me. And I'm talking about the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. And then the next relationship I needed to get was a relationship with the God of my understanding. Because if there's any reality that I got into, is that there had to be, that for my ass to be standing here, breathing the breath of life and talking to you, there had to be some divine intervention way before I had contact with that divine intervention looking out over my life. And that's why I always thank God for His grace and mercy, because I truly understand that His grace is what allowed me to make it here. Because my ass was on a death wish mission from day one. When I got that first whatever it was, I don't remember. I'm 52 years old, so I don't remember when the fuck I used for the first time, how old I was. I don't remember all that. And I don't believe I was an addict long before I picked up the drug. I had some real fucked up behaviors going on that led me to where I am today. You know what I'm saying? This is my experience, Riffin' Hope, and my personal opinion about my process. I'm not telling nobody else what theirs is. But, you know, I understand that it was some things going on and that I should have been dead by some of the situations and circumstances that I placed myself in active addiction, trying to find ways and means to get more. I've been in situations, and I don't want to go into war stories, where there was bullets flying and all this and all that, and my buddy got hit, but why not me? I've been in situations where we went to the same place and copped and shot the same amount or more, but he died and I didn't. Why? You know what I'm saying? And then I found out, you know, when I embarked on a second step where it talks about we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I didn't fucking like that step because the word sanity was in it. Because if I bought into that step, I had to buy into the fact that there was some kind of insanity going on in my life. And I wasn't feeling that. Because I was a smart dude, you know what I'm saying? Like I told you, I was in denial. I was having some bad luck, stroke of bad luck. So I didn't want to buy into the insanity piece. But you know what? There was an addict. And thank God for the predecessors of this program. There was an addict that came to me and said, okay, you're struggling with the second step. You know, because we some smart individuals up in our head. We got some stuff going on. We'll flip some stuff around, smack it up, flip it and rub it down. And can't nobody change our mind that we got the best outlook on this. We going to change the program. Oh, call World Service. They need to change this shit. You know what I'm saying? We'll come up with stuff like that. But this addict had some patience, some spiritual principles in tow, and he said to me, he said, let me ask you a question. Are you a pharmacist? And I was like, no, I'm not a pharmacist. Are you a chemist? It's like, man, what the hell is you talking about? You know what I'm saying? He said, last question. You know what I'm saying? Have you ever went to school for mixing chemicals or anything like that? No. Why? What do you mean by that? He said, and you said you shot drugs on a regular basis. Hell yeah, as much as I possibly could in the course of a day. 1,000 times if I can get it in like that. You know? So how did you know what was in the bag? How did you actually know what was in the bag was in the bag? Couldn't it, by some foreign chance, happen to be battery acid, rat poison, strychnine, or something? And if it was, how would you have known? I wouldn't have. The way I would have known was I'd have put water on it, and I would have drawn it up in a syringe, and I would have went to some isolated place, because I wouldn't have wanted to give Rick none of my shit. So I'd have went to some isolated place and shot it, and the way I would have found out was when I met my maker, that it wasn't that. Now, you sure you don't want to get in touch with the insanity in the second step? Okay, you made your point. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I went ahead and embarked. And sometimes, you know what I'm saying, when we get to a level of open-mindedness, you know what I'm saying, sometimes it takes a different delivery to reach individuals. That's why the weirdest program is so important, you know what I'm saying, that we don't shut ourselves off to other people. When I first came to Narcotics Anonymous, I was a bit racial. I didn't want to hear shit from you white guys. You didn't live where I live. You ain't come up in the projects. You can't help me. You ain't never been to New York City to cop. You ain't never went to prison. You can't help me. You can't identify with me. But you know what? If I truly got in touch with the God of my understanding, and I have a conscious contact with him, I gotta know that God speaks through people. Am I that fucking divine that I can tell God that he can't help me? But he can, because he's not. I can't do that. And you know what? When we get ourselves into cutting ourselves off from people for trivial things like that, you know what God chooses to do? Get you to a level of surrender by making the only person available to help you at the time that your ass is on fire is him. It's him. You know what I'm saying? So, you know what I'm saying? That racial part is gone, because another thing that I know by just merely looking around the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, that the disease of addiction does not discriminate. If I look around here and think, probably the disease of addiction is an equal opportunity ass whooper. We got all the spectrums of the color up in this camp, man. And his ass was whooped, his ass was whooped, her ass was whooped. That's why we here. You know what I'm saying? So how am I to think any differently? Our literature tells us that this program is a program of men and women. You know what I'm saying? So my ears is open, too, when it comes to women sharing a message of hope. Women do recover in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm not cutting myself off to none of the help. You know what I'm saying? If somebody comes up to me, asks me a question, or want to share something with me because of something that I shared, my ears is open. You ever see that movie with Pee Wee Herman in it when he had the big ear on? I got the big ear on today. You know what I'm saying? Because Narcotics Anonymous is a verbal fellowship. The help comes through verbal. You know what I'm saying? Verbally hearing a message of hope from one addict to another. I think our literature describes it by saying the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. You know, so I bought in. And what I'm telling you is I bought into the program of Narcotics Anonymous wholeheartedly. And I tell you what, it wasn't an easy process, the buy-in process. Because I grew up in a city in New Jersey, North New Jersey, the biggest city in Essex County. I had the extreme benefit through active addiction of going on tour to every prison in the state of New Jersey. My disease took me on tour. I was a fucking rock star. You know? But I've been to all the prisons in the state of New Jersey. And here's the hit. And the sad part. I never went to prison because I was trying to feed my family. I never went to prison because I was trying to pay my bills. I never went to prison because I was trying to help my mother or my father out. Every time my ass darkened the door of a reception station at a prison was because I was trying to find ways and means to get more. One of my saddest memories in my head about my behaviors before I got here was I used to do this thing that back in Jersey we call cattle rustling. Anybody know what that is? I know you do, Art. Put your hand down, man. You done heard my story before. Cattle rustling is going into supermarkets or meat stores establishments with a designed coat on. You know, you go to St. Vincent de Paul and get this big-ass coat, and you cut the lining out over here, and you cut the sleeve and the arm over here, and you go in there, and you walk out with half a cow in your coat. That's cattle rustling. So I stole meats and stuff like that, and I would take these meats out, and I would go in the bars, and I would sell steaks and ham hocks. Shit, I got so good with cattle rustling that I would take orders. You know what I'm saying? But check this out. I can remember leaving my apartment where my fiance and my two kids were. And because I had ran roughshod over the crib and took the VCR and took the DVD player and took the boombox radio out of the house and sold that shit, you know what I'm saying, and took whatever food was in there out of the house and sold it to find ways and means to get more, I left the house that morning knowing there was no food in the house. And that day, I think I stole over $500 worth of meat. I ain't bring not one hamburger home. And that's a sad memory because my kids was there. And the woman that I love. And this disease would not let me have enough compassion to bring them one steak. The disease said, we need it all. You know what I'm saying? And that's what it means. One is too many, a thousand is never enough. You know, because I could never, ever get satisfied. You know, I was always in a constant state of desperation. Even when I had one in my hand, I was still desperate about where the hell is the next one going to come from. Not satisfied, man. So I came to this program, institutionalized, hostile, confrontational, aggressive, manipulative. I didn't want to hear shit from Lottie Dottie or nobody talking about being open-minded. I was closed-minded. I was used to being in prison systems. So in prison systems, you prey on the weak. You look for the meek. And if anybody give you any eye contact and you look at them more than 2 minutes and they lower their gaze, their ass is mine. That's the way I thought and I lived. Because that was the tools that was accessible to me in active addiction, and I used those on the street, and I brought those with me to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, so when it came to getting in touch with affecting some positive change in my life, and I thank God for a thoroughly whooped ass when I got here, because I had enough experience with having my ass whooped when I thought I was a gangster, and I know in reality that a little bag of dope or a little vial of crack or a little vial of cocaine was beating the bullshit down my leg on a consistent basis, making me go against every moral, every value that I ever had in my life. You know what I'm saying? I understood. You know what I'm saying? It was rough for me in the beginning because I had all these non-existent virtues in tow. You know, from being institutionalized, I was accustomed to not letting people see me vulnerable. There was times in prison that I was scared over a certain situation or circumstance, you know what I'm saying? But you can't show that fear. In fact, what you need to do is act first. So my motto became, do unto others before they do unto you. You know what I'm saying? Which has no unconditional love to it. So when you talk about affecting positive change in your life through this program, one of the important things that we have to do is ask for help. And when you ask for help, the suggestion is men get with the men and women get with the women for obvious reasons. And everybody thinks it's because of sex when you say obvious reasons. But that's not it. You know what I'm saying? Because we come into this program grown up physically, men and women, physically, but mentally, we're boys and girls. And in order for a man to learn how to be a man, he needs to be taught by a man. Because a woman can't teach me how to be a man. And a man can't teach a woman how to be a woman. And then the other flip side to that is when men try to sponsor women and stuff like that, there comes in the possibility of intimacy coming into play. Not always, you know what I'm saying? But there is that possibility, so it's kind of frowned upon, you know what I'm saying, for that to happen. But, you know, that led me to believe that I needed to go to some man, get humble, and say, guess what? I don't know how to do something. Will you help me? To me, that was punk bitch shit. You know what I'm saying? But they told me that it was a step that I had to take because I ain't like people calling me names. And I was in a meeting one night, and this dude was saying, because I'm telling you, I was a smart addict and all kind of things up in my head. I said, okay, I can't do that. I can't ask no man. I can't tell no man I don't know nothing. So I said, I'm going to sponsor myself. I made the decision. And then I went to a meeting and I heard this guy with time clean. As a matter of fact, he had 7 years clean at the time he was sharing. I think I had about 60 days clean. And I made this decision. I was going to sponsor myself. And he shared that night. He shared on the topic of sponsorship. And he said, those who sponsor themselves have an asshole for a sponsee and a dickhead for a sponsor. I sat right there in my chair. I said, I hate that motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? Because all the doors was closing. All the excuses was being alleviated by people sharing the true strength, hope, and experience of this program and me having that big Pee Wee Herman ear on listening. You know what I'm saying? I had to come up out of that denial. So I asked the gentleman to sponsor me. And he told me that, you know, I needed to get in touch with the program. I need to read the literature. And today, as a result of that, I happen to be an individual that believes wholeheartedly. I bought into the literature. I live the literature. I believe what is stated in the literature because the tangible experience I have in my life is that this program works. So I embarked on the process, and it says it in the reading of what can I do? Now, you know how we are as addicts. As addicts, you know, we want shortcuts. We want shortcuts. If there is any shortcuts, you can rest believe we going to find them. And we going to access them. So, you know, and if we can't find a shortcut, what's the next thing we want? A guarantee. Now, I read, what can I do? And on page 55 of what can I do in the basic text, it clearly states in bold letters, working the steps of the program of Narcotics Anonymous is our best guarantee at staying clean. Because, you know, when I first got here, I had that mentality and I heard all these jokers talking about, yeah, work the steps, work the steps, work the steps, work the steps or die. And I was like in my head, why don't you step the fuck off, man? You know what I'm saying? And all that type of stuff. But when I read that that was our best guarantee at staying clean, I made a decision that I didn't want to return, you know, because I told you I had a problem with the word insanity in the second step. And our basic text describes insanity as repeating the same things over and over again, expecting different results. I told you that my eyes had been opened and the fantasy had been shattered, and I knew that I could no longer plead ignorance about the fact that when I put something in my system, my life goes to shit. One of the side effects of me being in active addiction is I break out in handcuffs. I understand that clearly. And the evidence, you know, today is that I have, is that if I stay clean, I stay out of jail. Just that simple. Just that simple. I stay out of jail if I stay clean. If I use them, going to jail. No ifs, ands, or buts. I'm going to do some crazy shit. You know what I mean? So I embarked on the steps. And I'm going to take you through a journey briefly of my process with the steps of Narcotics Anonymous. The first step says we came. We admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. I made that admission. I made that admission, and in making that admission, you say to yourself, you know, that we understand you can't use no matter what. And the powerless part, we understand that we're not powerless anymore, but when we put something in our system, we render ourselves powerless to the disease of addiction again. And if you listen to it in the literature, it says we admitted we were powerless. Not that we are powerless, we were powerless. So that word suggests to me that at some point, somewhere, we get power. I wanted to know when I could have some power. I like power, I like control, and I wanted to know where I can have it. So I delved further into the step, and it said that the unmanageability of our lives would slowly start to get better if we understood that we can't use nothing and stay away from being put in that powerless state, some of the unmanageability would go away. So I did that. I embarked on that. I do that on a regular basis, on a consistent basis. I don't use no matter what. Second step says we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves restores to sanity. Told you I had a problem with the sanity part of this program, but power, again, greater than myself. At first, I thought they was talking about God, but you know, I'm an addict. I snuck a little further and read the third step, and they was talking about God. So what are they talking about the power here? And I had to find out what the powers greater than me was so that I can tap into them, so that I can continue to stay clean and grow and connect with the, these powers and get them to working in my life. So I had to do the research to find out what the powers were. And you know what they were? The group, the meetings, was a power greater than myself. Another recovering addict, power greater than myself. A sponsor, power greater than myself. The literature, power greater than myself. You know, and when I access these things, I begun my process of restoration to sanity through accessing these things. You know, because if we don't, it's a program of change. If we don't do something different, ain't nothing different gonna happen. And if all you know is the streets, ways and means to get more, all your non-spiritual principles that you had, that you used out in the street, that's all you're going to access. So when you get in touch with these powers greater than yourself, you begin to learn the spiritual principles that they talk about you find in the steps so that you can start practicing those in your life and some change can start to come about. Then they told me in the third step that I needed to decide. I needed to decide whether or not I was going to invite a loving and caring God into my life. Damn, that idea appealed to me. Because wasn't nothing loving and caring in my life before. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I'm going to talk about how I was when I was in the street. I call you my friend. You my road dog. You my boy. You my bing, bang, bing. You my man, 50 grand. But let me not have no money. And the disease of addiction say his ass is expendable. When he turned his back, hit him in the head, he got $10. I'm going to put two knots on his head. You know what I'm saying? So there wasn't no real friends out there. There wasn't nobody being loving and caring. They was just trying to wait for an opportunity to tear your ass out the frame and feed their own disease or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So the idea of a loving and caring God in my life, you know what I'm saying, who had my best interest at heart, made sense to me. So I embarked on that. But there was some fear. Because the God concept that I had prior to coming to Narcotics Anonymous was the God of dogma. You know how your parents tell you, boy, if you're out there cursing in the street and doing these things and whatnot, God's going to punish you. I don't know nothing. I ain't read nothing in that spiritual literature talking about God punishing people. And the God they was describing to me was loving and caring. So I made an investment and I made a decision to invite a loving and caring God in my life. And when I did that, it relieved me of some stuff. Along with making that decision that God's will was going to happen anyway, whether I liked it or not. Believe it or not, it was a freedom step for me, because when I made that decision, it told me that I no longer had to be in charge of everything and all this and all that. That was freedom for me, because I was a control freak when I got here. Then the fourth step says, look at you. Keep the focus on you. Find out who you are, what your patterns is. And you do that by taking a searching and fearless moral inventory of yourself. Not nobody else, of me, told me to really look at me. Take off all the window dressing and all that and look at me. Because, you know, I told you, I got a little sense up in there, right? You know, when you go to a doctor, you know, you're not feeling well. He look you over and check you out and stuff, and then he find out what symptoms you're experiencing, and then he'll tell you what needs to be done to fix those symptoms, right? Well, that's what this searching and fearless moral inventory does. It gets you to look at your symptoms, your patterns, so that you can begin to correct the behaviors. And what is recovery period? It's an active change in our ideas, our attitudes, and our behaviors. So, you know, if I taking a look at myself and finding out what my patterns are, what behaviors I do, you know, I can see when I'm headed in a direction that's not so healthy for me. And before I get all the way to the unhealthy, where the circumstances and the consequences about to come, maybe I can kind of stop before I get to the consequences. You know, and then after that, the fifth step says, now that you know what your patterns are and accountability for who you truly were in active addiction and the behaviors, you know, that you needed to get honest about this. And you need to tell God, yourself, and another human being exactly what the fuck you did and who you is. Take accountability. You know, so I did that. I did that with my sponsor, and I tell you what, I was at a point where there were some things prior to coming to Narcotics Anonymous, man, that I said I would never tell nobody. Because I didn't have the ability to trust nobody, because I never trusted me. I didn't know what I would do. I never thought I would rob my mom. I never thought that I would do the things that I did to my family. I'm talking about my biological brothers and sisters. And the bitter ends, they was all afraid of me, you know. But I messed around and thought I would never tell some stuff, you know what. But I tell you what, when you choose a sponsor, you're supposed to choose somebody whose recovery you respect, who is willing to be your guide through the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, and along the way of that journey, you know, if you guys become friends and whatnot, you know what I'm saying, and more than sponsor-sponsee relationship, that's just a feather in the cap. But that's not a guarantee, and it's not necessary. Because I know a couple of people that got sponsors that they don't like as a person. They don't like. But they do respect their recovery and the way they live. You know what I'm saying? So they guide them through the program. But my relationship with my sponsor is I trust my sponsor immensely. And I told you I was institutionalized, and there ain't a gay bone in my body, but I'll say it like this. I trust my sponsor so immensely that if I decided I wanted to date a man, he would be the first person I would tell. And wouldn't worry about it going nowhere. That's the kind of trust level that me and my sponsor have. So, you know, I was able to sit down and tell God, myself, and another human being, which happened to be my sponsor, the exact natures of my wrong. And there was some greasy shit that I did along the way. You know what I'm saying? But when I told this stuff to my sponsor, it was like a weight of the world came off my shoulders. You know, I no longer had to carry those secrets around. You all heard it said secrets keep us sick, right? You know what I'm saying? I gave the secrets to him. And you know what? Some of the stuff that I gave to him in that step, you know, him and God in that step, you know, I thought that when I, excuse me, when I read it to him, that he would say, you know what? I want you to leave my house right now. Don't ever come back here anymore. If I see you in the neighborhood, I'm going to call the cops. You know, I thought that's what he was going to say. And you know what he said? Me too. Me too. I did some of that stuff too. And that goes to speak to what our literature says when it says, there ain't none of us terminally unique. We've all experienced some of the same things. Maybe not in the same exact way, but we've been to that same level of degradation in our lives in one form or another. You know what I'm saying? So that was cool. I freed myself up. I didn't have to carry that baggage around no more. The sixth step was talking about character defects and identifying the character defects that was accessible to me in the fourth step and all that. And once I found those character defects, I found out what spiritual principle I need to practice when I find myself accessing those character defects so that I could change and get better with my relationships and how I deal with society, people at large, my employers, you know, how I go to my God. Because I'm going to tell you, when I was in prison, I used to use God sometime when I was in prison. You might be able to identify right before you go to court. You know what I'm saying? You one of God's favorite children. Your knees is always dirty. You know, they come by your cell and be like, chow out. You know what I'm saying? I gotta pray. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to court tomorrow. I gotta pray. You know what I'm saying? Fasting and shit. You know what I'm saying? Well, I did that. You know what I'm saying? But now, you know what I'm saying? I have a conscious contact with the God of my understanding. Well, I just turn stuff over to him. And in the sixth step, when I found out about my character defects, and I accessed those spiritual principles to combat that so that I don't have to go there and reap those consequences that come with my actions. Remember, attitudes, ideas, attitudes, and behaviors. You know, I don't have to reap those consequences. Things started to change a little bit. You know, things started to change a little bit, and I started to find myself navigating my way through society a little bit easier without having conflicts, without walking past people, and they'd be like, hey, what's up, E? How you doing, man? Man, I hate that motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? And stuff like that, because I'm not accessing my character defects all the time. I'm not being so abrasive as I walk through life anymore. Why? Because I'm using spiritual principles. You know, when they said that we needed to change everything, it seemed like a monumental task. But one of the, you know, it also says the first page of the basic text, simplicity is the key. And this is just how simple it was. If I wanted to change, what I needed to do is start living by spiritual principles of this program, and the change happens within itself. It happens without my consent. If I use spiritual principles, you know, because I don't remember using spiritual principles when I was out there in the street. Hey, my man, yo, I only got $6. Can I get that bag for $6? I'll see you tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? I'll get out of the four. We'd be all good, man. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? All right, man, I got you. I'll see you tomorrow, right? You know, I come mall, I get money and whatnot. I go on the block. I ain't giving them shit. You know what I'm saying? There was no honesty. We didn't run back and say, hey, man, here's your $4. You know, hell no. We going all the way across town and cop from somebody else for the same $6 we got it from him. So I started practicing spiritual principles in my life and all my affairs. And the changes started happening. In the seventh step, it talks about asking God. But it doesn't say God, it says ask him. Because they say him because they assume that you've already established a relationship to some degree with God in the third step, so they don't have to say God. Because the word God scares some of us around here. Who's scared of God around here? Okay, you scared of God back there? Well, you need to think about the shit that ran you in here if you're going to be scared of God up in here. You know what I mean? I just want to put that out there to you. But, you know, I'm no longer afraid of God. So they say, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Shortcomings is the actions that go along with our character defects. You know, the character defect is I'm a thief. The action is when I walk into Walmart and steal. That's the shortcoming. You know what I'm saying? If I stop stealing, the character defect won't manifest itself. And I didn't know until I came to this program that thought does not require action. I was the fool on the street. If it came in my head, God damn it, I'm doing it. And we can't control the thoughts that come in our head. Sometimes I'll be angry when I come to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous for a meeting. And I look around and I say, I chop all these motherfuckers' heads off. But until I start actually chopping heads off, I ain't committed no crime. So the thought don't require that I act on it. I still think about using with 7 years clean. I was sitting on my couch the other day watching something on TV. And out of nowhere, the thought of blood drawing back in a syringe came in my head. But just for the day, I know what to do. I need to stop. Say the serenity prayer. Pick up a piece of literature and read it. Because the disease is still alive and well, and it lives right up here in my head. That's why I need to place myself in a position to get help on a daily basis, man. You know what I'm saying? Because I got 7 years clean don't mean that I can cut back on meetings. Remember earlier I said that I was told I need to chase my recovery like I chase my disease. And I was in it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, locked and loaded, and trying to find ways and means to get more. Even when I had one in my hand, still wasn't satisfied, wanted more. But all of a sudden, I'm a member of the program called the Gift of Life. Unconditional love. People that care about me don't want nothing from me, but they want to know what they can do and how they can help me to continue my journey. And I've had enough. I don't need none tonight. That's that same insanity that the second step was talking about. You know what I'm saying? Because he said an addict can't be satisfied. One is too many and 1,000 is never enough. But for some strange reason, after we get a little clean time in this program and we get a job, we get a girlfriend, we get a couple of new pair of jeans and a haircut and take a few showers, we've had enough. We don't need to come back so often. Those people in those meetings bug me. Well, ain't there one of you can run me out of the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Ain't nobody running me out of here because this is where I come get my medicine, and my medicine is healthy. The eighth step says that I need to take ownership for the people that I hurt along the way. I need to just make a list. It don't say do nothing else, but make a list. Make a list. Be willing to make a list and be honest with yourself, you know. And one of my sayings is, to thy own self be true. You know what I'm saying? When I came here, I told you I was a compulsive liar. And learning to be honest was a process for me. And the first part of that process, I was like, well, how the hell am I going to do this be honest thing, man? Because I lie about everything. Look, I come out of the bathroom and you get ready to go in there behind me and it blew up. Woo! Damn, man, you took a dump. Nope. You know what I'm saying? I just lie, man. You know what I'm saying? So I embarked on my honesty piece with myself. You know what I'm saying? I'm no longer going to look in the mirror and tell myself a bald-faced lie. Yo, dude, you an addict. You can't use no matter what. You can't plead ignorance that if you put one of anything in you, you're liable to set your whole disease off all over again. You know what I'm saying? So I don't tell myself lies no more. You know what I'm saying? Now, I might lie to one of you jokers. Yeah, E, you going to call me when I get home, man, and this, that, and other. We going to hang out. Yeah. Man, I get out the bed. You know what I'm saying? But I no longer lie to myself. And if I condition myself to not lie to myself, chances are, sooner or later, it's going to spread to you. I start being honest with the people that I deal with in my life, man. You know what I'm saying? So this is all a process. And the eighth step, man, you know, it's about being honest with yourself about who you caused harm. And I ain't talking about, you know, that sugar-coated shit. Like, yeah, I know I hit you in the head. But I wouldn't have hit you in the head if you didn't say what you said. We ain't talking about what he did. I'm taking ownership for my actions. You know what I'm saying? And that's all I'm accountable for. You know what I'm saying? I ain't accountable for what he did. If he did make me mad, make me hit him in the head, I need to talk about what part I played in it. Because when I keep the focus on me, chances are me is going to get better with me. Once I start focusing on somebody else, guess what I found out? What you eat won't make me shit. It won't make me dump, man. It won't even make me poop. You dig me? It won't. So I need to focus on what's going on in my system. And that's what's going to get me better. When I be true to thy own self, man, you know, that's what's going to get me better. The ninth step talks about actually physically making the amends to the people wherever possible, except if it'll cause more harm. You know what I'm saying? If I done slept with this woman, you know, years ago, and now she done got married and she got a husband and stuff, I don't need to go to her making amends. Well, her husband going to get upset about that. You know what I'm saying? The way I can make amends to her is just don't do shit like that no more. There are people in my life that was on my eight-step list that are dead. How do I make amends to them? Go dig them up and be like, yo, dude, I'm sorry about it. You know? No, I just stay clean. Stay clean and don't repeat the action that I did with those people right there. Another freedom step. It gets the hanks up off me. And the tenth step talks about getting to a point of inventory, sort of like the fourth step, you know what I'm saying? But on a more immediate level, where on a daily basis I do this inventory so that if I did you wrong tonight at the meeting or spoke to you wrong because I was having some kind of feelings, and I go home and I do this daily inventory, did I treat people right? What was I helpful to somebody in recovery? Now, you talk to that brother wrong, you know what I'm saying? I know that when I next time I see you that I need to pull you aside and promptly admit I was wrong. And it's not for you. Guess who it's for? It's for me. It's for me and my spirit. So that my spirit can be free. Because if you want to be honest about it, how many people know they did somebody wrong, and when they see that person around, they start to feel uncomfortable? That's your spirit telling you that your ass is wrong. And the only way that you can get that uncomfortable feeling up off you is probably go to that person and be a man or a woman and say, I apologize, I was wrong. Whether they accept it or not, you just freed yourself. You know? And that's how this process works. I understand this, man, only through sponsorship. I have not got none of this shit on my own accord. You know what I'm saying? I got this through working steps with my sponsor, man. And here's the hit. I've learned the literature. I know the literature. I quote the literature. But I don't know shit. I don't know shit. Because the very moment that I think I know something is the time that I'll get in touch with the biggest adversary of an addict in the process of recovery, and that's complacency. Once you feel like you know it, complacency starts to set in. You stop practicing. And this is a program of practice. We have to practice these principles in all our affairs. It's one of the most overlooked words in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, practice. Once we go through the step, learn the principles, and identify the behaviors that are not so conducive to a healthy interaction with society, the fellowship, your family members, your girl, your kids, whatever, then we need to stop accessing that stuff. You know, and we need to be more positive and more immediate in what we do. You know, and I've learned this through the program. You know, sometimes my support group, the guys that's in my support group, my sponsorship family, they say, yo, E, you're so passionate and sometimes so hard and serious, you know, about the program, you know. And the reason why I'm serious, man, is because I understand that my life is on the line. I don't want to die. You know what I'm saying? So when it comes to the process of recovery, man, I'm very serious. And real quick, I'm gonna wrap this up, but I'm gonna bring you up to speed on where I am right now and how I know that the program in Narcotics Anonymous works, and having a conscious contact with the God of your understanding is real important, because once we get clean and we start doing, you know, the right things and navigating through life and things start to happen, life on life terms happens. And I've always been a healthy individual, so to speak. I contracted hepatitis C through active addiction of intravenous drug use. I knew that was going on. You know what I'm saying? And but the irresponsibility of my actions in active addiction, I have high blood pressure that was untreated for a long time. And that was because in active addiction, I'd be damned if I give a doctor a $20 copay when I can get two bags. You understand what I'm saying? So that was something put on the back burner. You know what I'm saying? I had to be in emergency condition in order to see a doctor. So I didn't keep up with my health issues. And does anybody know what they call a high blood pressure in the medical community? I know you know, Rich. Who said that? Silent killer. That's what they say it is, the silent killer. Because it ain't a whole lot of symptoms that are involved with it, but it will tear your ass out the frame. I was feeling real unnormal. You know what I'm saying? I was feeling real unnormal, and I was going to work, and I was feeling sluggish, and I was like, you know, I was experiencing all these muscle spasms in my body, and I hadn't been to the gym lifting no weights, man. I was like, something's going on. So one morning I woke up, I said, you know what? Enough is enough. I need to address the problem and see what's going on. So I went to the emergency room, and I checked myself in, and they said, oh, your blood pressure is high. So they, you know, did their little thing. They did some blood work, had me sit in the room for like an hour and a half, and, you know, and it got to the point I was getting ready to leave. I was going to walk out because they left me there too long. You know how it is in these hospitals, right? So I'm standing at the door now. I'm not sitting in the little chair or on the table. You know, they sit you on the table and tell you, okay, we'll be back. And they pull a curtain and stuff. Well, the curtain was open, and I'm standing at the door. I'm looking down the hall like, yo, you motherfuckers don't know who this is. I'm leaving. You know what I mean? And the doctor walked around the thing. She came down the hallway. She said, Mr. Johnson, she said, I got some bad news for you. And I was like, okay. Now, in my mind, I diagnosed self. Okay, you know, I'm experiencing a little a vitamin deficiency somewhere in my body. They're going to write me out a prescription. They're going to tap me on the ass and send me home and charge the hell out me on the backside. You know what I mean? But she said, the bad news is that you are in complete kidney failure. Man, I'm standing there, you know, I wanted to smack this little motherfucker. I'm like, what? You got the wrong room. That's next door, but she said, no, she said my name. So I immediately went into denial. And then when I went, and we're talking about with 7 years clean. I'm telling you how life on life's terms and not being in touch with your emotions, you know, can trigger responses that are unhealthy to who we are in this fellowship. I immediately went into denial. Then I got angry as I started to get some clarity on what she was telling me. And I started to tell myself in my head that what she was telling me was almost like a death sentence. So she said, Mr. Johnson, what we would like to do is we would like to admit you right now and send you upstairs and give you some fluids and some IVs and run some tests and this, that, and other. I looked her right in her face and said, no, not now. Because I was pissed off with life, with God. I was asking myself in my head, why me? You know what I'm saying? I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. I'm making excuses. Listen to me. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. I'm staying clean. I've been clean for 7 years. I got a job. You know what I'm saying? I stopped messing around with so many women. You know, I pray, all this and all that. Now I'm getting angry with God. So when she came back, she said, well, okay, Mr. Johnson, but this needs to be addressed. This is a life-threatening issue. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm signing myself out. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And as I'm signing myself out, I'm making a decision in my head. fuck everything. I'm gonna use. Right across the street from the hospital is a little hole-in-the-wall dive bar that we suggest to new members in the program that they stay away from it. I had already planned it in my head. Me and my disease planned it in my head. I was leaving the emergency room. I was walking across the street. I was pulling up to the bar, and I was going to start the process of fucking my life up all over again. Had made the decision. But let me tell you about God, boy. Woo! I'm going to tell you about God. I walked out of that hospital. And I was all welled up inside. Tears was flowing in my eyes, man, because I knew I was getting ready to make a decision that was going to affect the rest of my life. The decision. Tears was welling up in my eyes. I reached in my pocket to pull out a Newport. And I went to flick the light on the cigarette. And my cell phone went off. Now, one of the benefits of the program Narcotics Anonymous, I told you it was about relationship. I got two kids by a woman that was smart enough to get her ass as far away from me as she can in active addiction when she found out how crazy I was. And I took all that stuff and didn't bring none of the cattle rustling shit back to the house. She left New Jersey and went all the way to Atlanta, Georgia with my two kids to get away from me. My kids kind of resented me and wouldn't talk to me while I was in active addiction, in and out of prison and all that. If I called, they wouldn't talk to me. But once I turned my life around in this program and did an eighth step and a ninth step, made some amends and whatnot, my son is fully back in my life. My daughter still having problems. Still having problems with me, but I'm still working on that. But my cell phone rang. And when I pulled my cell phone out and said hello, it was my son. And he said something like this to me. "Hey, Dad, how you doing? This is EJ." Because he's named after me. He said, "You know, I was thinking about you, and I was wondering how you're doing, how's your health, and all this and all that." And he started asking all the questions that God told him to call me up and save me and ask me. And there was no way that I could respond to him without my true feelings. And I started crying like a bitch on the telephone, and I told him the truth. Remember that fifth step stuff? I was talking about God, yourself, and another human being, the exact nature of what's going on. And I told him what's going on, and it started to flow up off me. You know what I'm saying? And he was like, "Dad, anything that I can do, I'll come up there and give up a kidney. Let me know what I need to do, this, that, and other." When I hung up from talking to him, I immediately got on the phone. I called my sponsor because that brought me back into reality. God sent an angel, man. He said, "No." He said, "I'm not going to let you do that to yourself." You know what I'm saying? He sent an angel in the form of my son. So right now, I go to dialysis treatment 3 times a week. You know what I'm saying? I got a tube hanging out my side right here. I got one hanging out my chest. And I got a medically implanted thing in my arm where it feels like there's a time bomb if you get close to me in my arm. You know, and I'm dealing with it. I've been rendered disabled. My doctor will not let me go back to work. So now, you know what I'm saying, after all this time working on my life, I can't go to work. I wake up in the morning, and I ain't got shit to do. I sit around and watch the grass grow. You know what I'm saying? But one of the things that I've always said in the process of recovery is now that I got my life back, my sponsor asked me one time what I wanted to do with it. I wanted to find out what I really wanted to do with my life now that I got it back, and I said I want to go back to school. I want to go back to school. And now, you know, it's about turning positives and negatives into positives. And I think that this is an opportunity that God has placed in my life for me to slow up. You know what I'm saying? Go back, revamp myself, and reshape myself by going back to school. So the next time that I come up to a podium, I want to be telling you about having a 4.0 grade point average in some school. You know what I'm saying? That's what I want to be sharing with you. I'm not going to let nothing get me under the max. And my support group always calling me up, checking on me. Remember the girl that was sharing? She was talking about they right there. Go home. Leave me alone. You know what I'm saying? They want to make sure that I ain't allowing the bugaboos to creep in my head. And I think that, you know, it's all over with and this is a good reason. But now I'm turning it around in positive. I'm understanding that there's a reason that this happened in my life. You know what I'm saying? And I don't need to keep it to myself. I need to come in here and share it because there's some other members that may be faced with it or going to go through it and haven't heard it from me might think, I'm not alone. She said it earlier. Narcotics Anonymous, never alone. And I like to say never again. We don't have to be alone unless we want to be. So that's where I'm at now in my life. And I always like to end and kind of, you know, lighten it up because I know I'm a little bit serious. So I'm going to tell you a joke. Tell you a joke. You ready? All right, here's the joke. There was these two guys, right? And they was in recovery. And they was really good friends. They went to meetings together. They was in rehab together. They was in detox together. And they made a decision. We're going to do this thing together. And we're going to stay clean, all right? So they go through detox. They go through the rehab. They go to the halfway house. And they staying clean. And they doing the damn thing, right? And things are going well in both of their lives. Things are taking off. And life on life's terms is coming into play. So these two guys. And then one day, one of them gets sick. And he dies. And he dies. So the other one, he just goes into panic mode. He goes into grief mode. He doesn't want to do anything anymore. He don't want to make meetings without his boy. He don't want to get out the bed. He don't want to come out his room. He's in a year mourning. And he's laying in the bed one day. And all of a sudden he turns over and he sees this bright light in his room. There was his buddy. His buddy came to see him. He's like, yo, man, you know, like, what's going on? What you doing? You know, and he was like, you can't just stay in that bed and not continue to recover, man. He said, you need to get back on the horse because if the shoe was on the other foot, I'm going to keep the decision that we made and I was continue to go to meetings and stuff, you know. So his buddy came back and inspired him. And he got back into the meetings, and he's going to the meetings, and he's doing his thing. And one day after he goes through his spiritual maintenance, he's sitting there in meditation, and he's remembering a pleasant conversation that him and his boy had. And this conversation was about God and the afterlife, and they was wondering whether or not there was NA meetings in heaven. So he was thinking about it. He smiled and stuff, and he was like, yeah, that was the good old times and whatnot. He took his butt to bed that night. Again, he sees this bright light in his room. And so he knew it was his boy, so he got up and he sat in the bed. He was like, hey, man, what's going on? How you doing, man? How's things going on in heaven, man? And he was like, things are good, man. You know what I'm saying? He said, I got some good news, and I got some bad news for you, man. And he says, Well, give me the good news, right? And he says, okay, the good news is that, remember we had that conversation about, was there Narcotics Anonymous meetings in heaven? They're there. I've been there. Sat right next to Rick James. You know what I mean? I was there. You know what I'm saying? And he said, yeah, man, that's good. That's great and stuff. He said, what's the bad news? He said, well, tonight, it's a speaker meeting. And he said, So why is that bad news? He said, because your ass is speaker. My name's Adam.